wherever you live across the United States of America, my great state of Louisiana, and across the world. This is David Duke, and this is the David Duke program on the Rents Radio Network. We're in the Christmas season, and in addition to the fantastic time of year, it's my favorite time of year. It's a great time to be with your family and your loved ones. It really epitomizes to me the spirit of Western and European civilization. The beauty, the love, the incredible artwork connected with it, the sense of family, the sense of civilization, truly. A magnificent civilization that our forefathers have bequeathed to us. And Christian Christmas is part of that tradition. It is part of the soul and sinew of Western man at this point in our heritage. And of course, that's under attack by the usual suspects. It's completely under attack. We did an incredible show yesterday with Pastor Mark Dankoff, and we talked about the incredible viciousness and vile aspect of the Jewish media in attacking Christmas and the hypocrisy of it all. I'm not going to go to a whole nother show now. I'm going to have on Eric Stryker in a few moments, a young man who's doing a lot of activism, a lot of writing, a lot of work for the cause, for the preservation of our people. But I do want to recount again one very specific principle you can talk to your friends about, which is so powerful. The Supreme Court of the United States decided that it was unconstitutional, in their words, it was against the Constitution of the United States to put up or erect on any public land, city hall, state, federal, local jurisdiction, any sort of Christian Christmas decoration, crosses, manger scenes, creches, that's also called in the French. And that was ruled unconstitutional under the separation of church and state. Interestingly, though, isn't it, that this was done in 1989, which is exactly 200 years since the adoption of the Constitution of the United States. And for some reason, all those men who adopted the Constitution of the United States, who gave us this Constitution and our Bill of Rights and all these protections in this Constitution, they didn't see it as making a as establishing a particular entity. That aspect of the Bill of Rights was about the government getting behind one specific institution of religion, not a religious idea. Every founding father understood that this was overwhelmingly a Christian country and devoted to Christian values, and they would roll over in their graves to think that the Christmas traditions, which our people have loved for centuries, for a couple thousand years now, that these traditions would be not allowed to be practiced in public institutions, which are really owned by the people. That is not a oppression of religion. That is a repression of free speech, and it's a repression of people's right to preserve their own particular traditions and heritage and values. But somehow the Supreme Court ruled that a menorah, and by the way, I can give you a quote from Jewish sources on the menorah, the oldest symbol, they say, the oldest and clearest symbol of Judaism that exists. It's been around for thousands of years, and the oldest symbol of Judaism that is constantly used to symbolize Judaism, maybe that's a good new term we should start with. Judaism, the symbol of this Jewish religion, is the menorah. And guess what, folks? The Supreme Court ruled that you can put up a giant menorah in front of the White House. You just can't put up a manger scene. No, that's really a terrible thing. So the 85% of the country, in fact, I think 90% of Americans actually enjoy Christmas and the Christian traditions and find Christmas carols beautiful and positive and wonderful. And the whole spirit of Christmas, peace on earth, goodwill toward men, the idea that a child was born, which would make the world new and would give people this, you know, the positive outlook toward life and love. And, you know, these people, our people, the vast majority of Americans were thwarted in their values, where at the same time this tiny 2% Jewish population. And by the way, you'd think it was the atheists, right? It wasn't Madeline O'Hare and the atheists. They weren't the ones that funded and brought about this, even though most atheist groups are overwhelmingly funded by Jews. But it was actually the American Jewish Committee, American Jewish Congress, the ADL, and also the ACLU, which is, for all practical purposes, a Jewish organization in terms of Jewish leadership and power and funding. Anyway, I want to go directly now to my guest, Eric Stryker. Welcome to the show.
Greetings, Dr. Duke. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's great to be with you. And I want to start off today, and I decided to save this. I'm going to make it a fairly short monologue on this issue, but I decided to save this till I brought you on. As I look across the media landscape and I go to Google and I look at what's going on in the country, let me give a couple facts that you're probably familiar with, too, that are very interesting and very clear where the media is going. AP put out a story that they were no longer going to use when the term outright was used, they were going to define that as neo-Nazism. So whatever. So alt-right, in fact, they even are trying to not use the term alt-right. They want to destroy the term alt-right because they feel that has a softer or a more open position. And people might actually listen to what people who use the term alt-right might listen to what they say, the ideas they talk about, rather than fulfill these stereotypes created by the Jewish media, National Socialism and anti-Semitism and racism and all the rest of it. So there we are. And then we have Twitter announcing that they're looking very, very closely at Donald Trump's Twitter account. And they said, to be exact, their spokesman said that Donald Trump was on the edge of losing his Twitter account. Of course, Twitter is the way that more people communicate between one another in the world than any other way. I mean, there's not even a single telephone company that has more connections between people than what Twitter has. Billions of people actually use Twitter around the world, family, friends, relatives, and so forth. And this should be looked like as an utility. If they want to use the airwaves, if they want to use the internet, which is the purview of really the people in many ways. It is not something that's the private purview of one company, and they get people involved in it, it should be free. It should have completely free political speech and political thought and discourse and argument. And that obviously that's not what's happening in this country. Facebook is another example of that. A lot of people communicate with that. It needs to be regulated and it needs to be free. It needs to allow people to discuss things. So furthermore, they're talking about, they're really going full bore against Trump right now. I mean, they're calling him racist every second, it seems. They're calling him a Nazi. They're calling him KKK. And as you know, I'm not even KKK. It's been 40 years since I was KKK. I'm not ashamed of the fact that as a young man, I stood up and I joined an organization. The only one I saw that was standing up for my people, my heritage. I acted properly. I acted morally. I was absolutely nonviolent, and I stood up strongly for my heritage, and I will continue to stand up strongly for my heritage, even though I don't use that venue and I don't use that approach. And I tend to think a different kind of approach is more effective for what I believe in than that. But here we have full bore. The media is absolutely going full bore. What's your take on all this? That's a pretty long introduction, but what's your take on this?
Well, I think there's three points to be made about this. The first one, I actually wanted to say something in response to your comments on Christmas and how Jews organize to basically de-Christianize the public space. And when I say de-Christianize, I don't mean respect all beliefs or ensure the protection of all beliefs, but rather to exclusively exclude Christians. And the primary method of doing this is obviously through litigation, as you were saying before, but also there's another way they do it, which is I'm actually researching an article on this right now There's an organization called the Temple of Satan, and they've been in the news because they've been putting up satanic statues everywhere. Wherever they put up the Ten Commandments, these guys go there, and it's mostly in red states, obviously, and they put up images of Satan and obscenity and such. And basically, this group is controlled by Jewish individuals, people of Jewish heritage, and the idea is that, which they basically admitted to, is that they seek to use obscenity to sort of use the weight of constitutional protections for speech and displays of mangers and religious symbols, and sort of use it against them to terrorize local Christians into hiding their symbols from the public space. Now, that's the first thing. As to what you were saying about the Associated Press and the politicization of language, a lot of people should look into the Associated Press style book, which is the guideline that's changing the term alt-right to neo-Nazi, or putting alt-right in quotes, scare quotes, that is, sarcastic quotes. And the individual that came up with this is a Jew named Norm Goldstein. And he was a pioneer of what they call political correctness, as in if there's a crime where it's a black person victimizing a white, you don't mention race. That's in the AP style book. If there's a term for illegal immigrant, the AP style book tells you not to use that term, to use undocumented worker.
Yeah, so, the idea was like the illegal alien. See, and that you can't use that because it says that they are illegally in the country, which they are illegally. They've broken the law. And secondly, they're alien. They're not American citizens. So it's a perfectly legitimate term, but it doesn't sound good. And they're always trying to program us, aren't they, Eric?
But why we have to ask ourselves to look at, like the Germans say, the thing within the thing. That's the basis of all German manufacturing and engineering. So there's this thing within a thing. Where does this concept that the term illegal alien, which has been used probably since time immemorial, since when did this become impolite to use? And basically it traces back to a small clique of mentally ill people in American Jewish academia, who then are, their ideas are taken by the Associated Press, like Norm Goldstein, who makes this the orthodoxy and the stylistic guide for all mainstream media in the United States. So you casually see this word or concept phased out of public discourse until it starts sounding offensive and you can't use it anymore.
Yeah,
and there
are
many
down.
Examples of this. Yeah,
that's right. Let's boil it down. I mean, you know, the if somebody has broken the law and crossed the border illegally, not going through customs, not going through immigration, any European American that would do that, anybody that would do that, any country, they're in serious trouble. It is a violation not only of immigration laws and customs laws, because obviously when people can go into a country without going through customs, they can bring in drugs, weapons of mass destruction, whatever. But so they are violating the criminal code. In real fact, they are criminal aliens. Are illegal aliens is really close to it, but they are criminals who broke an American law, flaunted our law, and come into the United States of America. And of course, the impact of their entry in the United States of America is huge, the same way Donald Trump was talking about earlier in the campaign, the fact that not all, but certainly a significant portion of these people that have come in from Mexico have been criminals. Overwhelmingly, they are about 70% of them, even in second degeneration, rather than the generation. I guess that's I said it right the first time. Even the second generation, there are somewhere around 70% of these people have come in legally or illegally from Mexico, are now embroiled in the welfare system. In other words, getting money from the hardworking, taxpaying American citizen. And also their criminal rates of violence and other kinds of theft and criminality is extremely great. So not only are they actually criminals who have broken American law, they're illegal aliens, but they're actually also contributing thousands and thousands of murders over the years. They've contributed hundreds of thousands of property crimes and thefts, assaults. They've contributed thousands and thousands of rapes of American women in this country because of their entry. And all those casualties wouldn't be there except for the fact that our country has allowed both the immigration, both illegal and legal. So good point. Why do they do this? It's programming, isn't it?
It's to push a political agenda. And, you know, that's one of the biggest problems of having a media that's completely and utterly monopolized by your enemy. I mean, many conservative types believe that the only form of possible totalitarianism is when you have a state controlling the media. But if you have a bunch of private billionaires and a small cabal of people that's on the same page on something, let's say, hey, we're going to censor and suppress all criticism of immigration. We're going to start labeling people who are anti-abortion rather than pro-life. We're just going to say they're anti-abortion, right? We're going to use smear terms and prejudicing labels in order to consolidate our ideological agenda, which goes against the interests of the majority in the country of which they burrow into as a parasite would. And I think going on that to show you the harrowing danger of this Zionist-controlled media, have you been following what's going on in Gatlinburg at all, Dr. Duke?
I have, and it's interesting. I've noticed on Twitter and a lot of the other social media, as well as a lot of the almost mainstream media, that they've really been gloating over the death of European Americans in that region from these fires, from these terrible wildfires, and all the suffering that they've been going. People, 150 homes at least have been destroyed, and I don't know how anybody out there can conceive of, if they haven't lost a home through fire, I don't think most people can conceive of the loss that happens when you have a house consumed by fire or by hurricane, as we've had a lot of hurricanes where I live. It's just devastating. You lose all your mementos, your letters from loved ones, could be back from generations. You have tremendous economic suffering. You have often physical suffering because of injuries from these things and other aspects of your life, the disruption of your life. You destroy your home. And I mean, it's just an amazing thing. And yet there's a lot of gloating going on about this right now, too, which shows you, again, the absolute evil of our Jewish dominated media and the Jewish dominated narrative of what's going on in this country. They present to us that white people are just nothing but a bunch of evil SOBs, and so no matter what happens, they deserve, if they get murdered, if they get raped, if they get robbed, they deserve it. And that's why we've seen in Europe and America in some cases where white people have been victims, where women have been raped, and or even men have been raped. I think there was a case like that in Germany, and they went, oh my God, well, I guess I deserved it because I'm, you know, part of the privileged class or something. Well, it's not being privileged if you're raped by someone.
Yeah, absolutely not.
But I mean, it's, yeah, so it is amazing, isn't it? I mean, it's one of those bellwethers that illustrates the depth of depravity, the depth of hatred that the media has toward our heritage and our people.
It's really sickening. I have an article up on this on the Daily Stormer that was published this morning. And here's something I know about Gatlinburg.
Now, tell us about that. Tell our listeners about that so we can get them up to speed on it, please.
Okay. Well, there's a video that went viral, and it was of a man who was driving through Appalachia, through the Smoky Mountains, and he was traveling through there. And he basically gets into this part of the drive that's entirely on fire. This was, I believe, yesterday or 2 days ago. The entire time, this man is, he got out of the fire, but by the skin of his teeth. And the entire time, He's cursing the media. Why? Because the media has more or less not reported this until today and last night. This has been going on for days. People have been dying for days. People have been losing their homes for days. And, you know, this is a very humble community where one in four people is under the federal poverty line. It's 95% white. They don't have any advocates. So what happens? These Jews that control the media have completely ignored this. And I contrasted this on the Daily Stormer to another wildfire that happened last week that got a lot more coverage. Why did it get more coverage? Well, the other wildfire happened in Israel. And the Associated Press, the Wire Services, the New York Times, they covered the wildfire in Israel more intensely and closer than they have this one. And to my knowledge, no one died in the wildfire in Israel. And yet, because thanks to the international coverage the Jewish media has given the Israeli wildfire, they've had all kinds of outpouring of support from even nations that are hostile to Jews, like Egypt and Turkey and Russia. And these people have gone to Israel as well as a volunteer battalion of Gentile American firefighters who have gone to Israel to go fight the fire for these Jews. Meanwhile, their own countrymen in Appalachia are pleading for help, and no one's helping.
I read in one of the Google News stories this morning that Tennessee is saying that this is one of the worst, perhaps the worst wildfires they've ever had in history. And yet, it's not getting much play, but it's our folks who are the victims. And we're privileged, so you don't have to worry about our people when it's our family. Back in a minute with Eric Stryker, a fine young man who is really active trying to defend culture, heritage. Not just trying, he's doing it, he's fighting. Back in a minute after this break from our network. Okay, folks, this is Dave Duke, and this is the Rents Radio Network, and this is the Dave Duke program on the Rents Radio Network. Jeff Rents has reached so many people around the world with his incredible ability to reach people with the truth, and I'm very, very proud to be on this network, along with Jeff and many other major people. Anyway, we've got on today a very interesting and well-spoken. Eric Stryker is on. He's a white activist, very successful one. He is a writer. He's an up-and-coming person in the movement for the preservation of our heritage and freedom. And he's now, right now, discussing the wildfires in Tennessee, and he's comparing it to the so-called wildfires in Israel, where the Tennessee wildfires have been worse. But why isn't the media covering it? Is the reason why, Eric, would you suppose, is that even though the wildfires in Israel are diminishing, when Jews suffer anything, they want to have this massive world sympathy for it. And they know that if they talk much about the problem that's going on in Tennessee, that they're not going to get the money, the support, the all the things that they want out of this and the goodwill out of it. Interestingly enough, as you know, our government gives tens of thousands of dollars equivalent for every Israeli man, woman, and child in a country that is just as rich as anything America is. Why in the world should we be doing this? So let's talk about that aspect for a moment from your research. What is going on here? Why are we not hearing about Gatlinburg, and why are we hearing about Israel continuously? And is you think that's part of what they're doing? Is they're simply trying to make sure that there's no distraction from the narrative they're giving of the poor Jews again?
I think it's actually a lot simpler than that. I think that they're basically taking pleasure in this event because my personal opinion is that these people just want us dead. I mean, let me read to you this tweet about the fire by Michael Ian Black. Are you familiar with him, the comedian?
Not really. I don't follow too many Jewish comedians.
He is funny, but inadvertently.
Is he Jewish or Gentile?
His real name is Schwartz.
Ah, I got you.
So he's a Jew. And this guy's on TV. He's got all these TV shows. He was a big anti-Trump person. Well, he wrote a tweet on November 29th at 9:56 a.m. Says, I quote, "When Trump supporters voted to, open quote, burn it all down, close quote, I bet they didn't think it would start with Tennessee." That was his quote. Here's another one by someone that has parentheses around their name, so you can kind of guess who that is. It says, open quote, "This is awesome. You Hicks are so stupid, you can't even spell the town name right." And it says, F. Gatlinburg. This is the kind of stuff these Jews are writing. So if these people control your media, I think it's pretty safe to say that their motive is for you to get hurt, for you to die, and for the world to ignore it.
Well, I can't think of another explanation. We got to go back to history. That's my specialty, as well as common events, current events, and political events. But look at history. I mean, the Jewish entity, the Jewish establishment, so to speak, and when you talk about a Jewish establishment, it exists. There's no argument about it. You can definitely define it. You can see the organizations that are a part of it. You can see their agenda. And the Jewish establishment globally at the turn of the 20th century was globally behind the Bolshevik revolutions that were occurring in Russia and other countries of the world. For instance, in the early part, in the wake of the First World War in Hungary and many other countries of Eastern Europe and some of the revolutionary communist movements. And the Jewish community all over the world, capitalist Jews, banking Jews, religious Jews who are supposed to not be in favor of a group that is an atheist ideology, such as communism is. Of course, communism does worship a god, and that god is Jewish, you know, and the Jewish people per se. But they killed tens of millions of our people. That's why I really can't understand with this cuckoldry that exists even among people who say they want to defend the right white race, and then they won't even dare to stand up and criticize the Jewish elite, the Jewish establishment, the Jewish-controlled media, the Jewish-controlled banking establishment, the Jewish-controlled political establishment, the Jewish-controlled academia that is ushering in this tremendous hatred against our people.
Well, I think these people are actually quite dangerous, what the people you're mentioning, the nationalists that deny the Jewish role, because, you see, that's how we get to the ridiculous discourse we have now, where people pretend that a concept or an oppressive institutional structure like political correctness just came down from the sky, rained down on us one day. In truth, the people that come up with this stuff sit in boardrooms, they have names, they work for major companies, they have think tanks, and they come up with this stuff and implement it from top to bottom. And if you don't name these people, say, hey, Norm Goldstein made the term illegal alien politically incorrect. Norm Goldstein demands that you cover or lie or not or omit when a black person commits a hate crime against a white person.
We can go on down the line. The Jewish kings of pornography, as I talked about yesterday, in fact, on the Christmas article, where they literally, and Jews who write about it, say that pornography is, in fact, a method of destroying white people, fundamentally. Oh. A subversive program that's rotting out and destroying and harming white people across the world. That's exactly what they say. In fact, they say that pornography is based not simply because of a monetary initiative. This is Jewish professors saying this in a Jewish academic quarterly, this Jewish quarterly, intellectual quarterly magazine. He says that these porn kings not only have a economic motive, but they are motivated by an atavistic hatred against what they call WASPs or European people, and they see pornography as a way to harm us. That is the height of evil. I couldn't even imagine somebody on our side saying, well, we got to get all these Jewish kids involved in pornography, right? I mean, it's really incredible to think of the depth of the evil that we have as our enemy, and the idea that we can't even oppose this, we can't even identify it. No wonder we've been losing for 70 years. I believe, and I may ask you your opinion. I believe, as been around for a long time in this movement, I mean, I believe the reason we've been losing overall until maybe now, we're starting to turn this thing around. I'm actually among so many people today. Well, I think we've been losing because we haven't been willing to confront the source of the problem, and that has been this Jewish tribalist power that exists undeniably in all of these powerful areas of government. And it's not just Mr. Goldstein. As you know, and we talk about gun control, the biggest single funder for the efforts to take away your guns is Mr. Bloomberg, for instance. We can just keep going on and on. You can go to the LGBT movement. All these LGBT-type organizations, tranny organizations, they're all, I mean, literally all of them are led by Jewish extremists. And the interesting thing is the Jewish establishment supports Israel, where they don't even allow a gay marriage there. But they promote gay marriage in Europe and America, but they support Israel, which will never allow. There's no boycotting of Israel because they won't have a gay marriage there.
Oh, well, when it comes to Israel, I've actually written extensively on Israel in that regard, that Israel is actually has one of the leading birth rates in the Middle East, which is known for its high birth rates. The average religious Jew in Israel has approximately 7 children, and the average atheist Jew, who, as we all know, less religious people tend to have fewer children. The average atheist Jew in Israel has 3 children, which is well above. It's almost double the birth rate of Italy, of Germany, of Argentina, of America for whites. You know,
that's powerful statistics. Powerful.
Yeah, it's an article I wrote about a year and a half ago. It's called "The Gazification of Europe," where I try and make the parallel between what's happening in the West and Gaza. And here's some other amazing things. You see, in Israel, their entire society is oriented around increasing the Jewish birth rate while decreasing the indigenous Arab birth rate. So what happens is that the Israeli government opens up these fertility clinics that are completely free to use, so that Jewish women, when they get into their later 30s and it's harder to have children, they go undergo treatment and have a third or fourth or fifth child on the government's dime. Now, compare that to the United States.
That's our dime, really, because we end up financing that.
Yeah, exactly. But compare that to the United States, where, I mean, I'm not sure, I don't have any children, but I can't even imagine what a lower middle class person that can't apply for Medicare or Medicaid has to pay to have a child. It's probably
That's right. And that's back to Jewish bellwether again. Has not feminism, radical feminism, led to this? The idea of to young women that you've got to have a career and you've got to wait to have a child till it's too late, and then by the time they realize, hey, I might not be able to have a child, and I'm not fulfilled as a woman, not being able to give birth to a new life. And then what happened? What do they do? Well, at that point, if they're having trouble getting pregnant, what occurs? Well, the fertility clinics would cost $50,000, $60,000, sometimes $100,000, which a lot of people can't afford. And they can't afford it in part because of the high taxes we pay that finances the birth rate among non-whites in our own society and finances the illegal aliens who come into the country, as well as the other non-whites who immigrate legally into America.
Yeah, and additionally, in Israel, my personal opinion is that the high divorce rate in the United States is hurting the birth rate as well. In Israel, it's basically illegal to get a divorce unless you have an extremely good reason. The way they get around it is by you have to go to a council of rabbis, and you need to get their permission, and their standard for a divorce is very high, so you have to prove literal and extreme physical abuse from your husband to divorce him. When you compare the United States, where one out of two or three marriages ends up in divorce. And then, of course, you have the abortion issue. And no issue in the United States is more intertwined with Jews than abortion. And yet in Israel, in order for a woman to get an abortion, she has to go in front of a panel of doctors and make an argument for why she wants an abortion. Like, is your child going to be hopelessly, sick or, you know, is it a rape? Is it this? You have to convince a panel of doctors in Israel who are not too keen on giving you the right to an abortion just like that. They don't rubber stamp it. You have to convince them. Now compare that to America, where the Jews want 13-year-old girls to go to an abortion clinic and have an abortion and not even have to tell their parents. Compare that. You know,
a good example. This is a good show, because what we're doing here is we're calling out all these incredible anomalies. They're not even anomalies. What they are is hypocrisies, and it just shows you the lies that exist. I mean, you know, all of you, I know that you've, in the course of your young life and the young students you've talked to and the young people you've talked to, you run into these progressive people, you run into the young liberals, the young social justice people, and everything they say makes no sense when it comes to the whole issue of anti-Semitism, when it comes to the whole issue of Israel, when it comes to the whole issue of Jewish power in America. Because isn't it amazing to think about what, give a good example. It is looked at as a person of great evil who simply, if they're a white person, if any white star, media, music, personality in this country would say, well, actually, I want to marry a white person and I want to have a white child. I love white people. I like the way white people look better than other people. I'm attracted to the characteristics of white people. I want to preserve the heritage. I want my kid to look something like myself and my mother and father and the people that came before me. They would be absolutely just devastated by the media. I mean, they would be run out of the business. They wouldn't get a movie. They wouldn't get a record contract. They would be destroyed. They would be demonized by the media. And yet the state of Israel has absolute policy by law, which is run by the rabbinical courts, that a Jew cannot marry a non-Jew. And by the way, some people might say, well, that's just religion or whatever. But still, that would be against the values of this country, according to the Jewish public. They would be really furious if a person said, well, you know, Christian child, you know, should obviously marry a Muslim if they want to. No big deal. But this is based on race, because in Israel, as you know, a atheist Jew, a non-religious Jew, has no problem whatsoever marrying a religious Jew. The only thing that they're ultimately concerned about is your lineage, is your DNA, is your genetics. That's what they care about. And yet, the fact that Israel has this law that they don't allow these marriages between Jews and non-Jews, and they also demonize any Jew. If a Jew goes off reservation and starts even dating an Arab boy, like a Jewish girl, they put up posters with their picture in the subways, and they're not torn down by the Antifada or something like that, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, not. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we have such an enormous hypocrisy, and yet there are people. I just read an article in the New York Times by a person, used to be apparently in our cause, but is not in our cause anymore, and How in the world can someone not see that the ultimate racism and all the most vile, the vile aspects of it, killing people, hurting people, torturing people, trying to destroy other races, the most vile, quote, racist, by their own definition, has been Jewish racism in this world?
Well, I probably can offer a unique perspective on that dichotomy you mentioned, because I actually come from the left. I was never a conservative. I've never been a libertarian. I was a leftist, a socialist before. Mm-hmm. And I saw these contradictions, and, you know, I still have a lot of the same opinions on maybe certain economic issues or health issues and stuff. But what the left doesn't offer it's really stark what the left doesn't offer, because you see, the left is critical of Israel and Zionism. And it's also critical of all sorts of ideas, like, you know,
but it's
traditional.
It doesn't understand that Israel is supported by the entirety of the Jewish establishment in America. So they don't translate that into being, quote, anti-Jewish establishment, anti-Jewish elite, right?
Well, from my personal experience, what I see actually is, a lot of people don't know this, but a lot of these pro-Palestinian groups are run by Jews. on college campuses. They're actually run by Jews. And of course, someone would look at that on the surface and say, oh, those are self-hating Jews, or those are Jews that have a conscience and stuff. But for what I noticed personally, those Jews that control these campus Palestinian right groups, they tend to be more concerned with people making connections between Zionism and mass media control, or Zionism and financial power, than they are anything about Palestinians. That's the experience I've had.
They're trying to manage those groups, right, and make sure they control the narrative.
Controlled opposition. Those people, most of, there are genuinely morally virtuous Jewish critics of Israel, like Gilad Atzmon and such, but as a rule,
that's like finding a needle in a haystack.
Oh, yeah, and Jews on the left, for example, a lot of people don't know this because they've never been on the left, but if you start criticizing finance capital, you start talking to a leftist, even a communist, about the bankers and stuff like that, you see them, the more in tune with Jewish, the more Jewish types tend to look at you, they start getting the vapors. They're like, what do you mean? What do you mean finance capital? What's that mean? What do you mean by that? And these are communists that are talking like this.
Who should be the biggest enemy of the communists would be big bankers, wouldn't it? Big stock manipulators, of course.
They get visibly nervous when you say, hey, look at that sweaty stockbroker over there. Don't you dislike him just like I do? And they're like, yeah, in theory I do, but you know, what do you mean by that? Like, they always think you're talking in code. Because deep down inside, they know.
Well, they know. They know.
Yeah. So they try and get you to focus on, like, these communist people. They used to, around where I live, they used to protest this, like, corner store. And, yeah, they had unfair labor practices, but it was a small business. It was small potatoes. And they were obsessed with this, with picketing the store and stuff. And I said, you know, why don't we go picket Goldman Sachs? Why don't we go picket this and that? And, you know, it kind of falls on deaf ears. That's when I started realizing that I was being used by people that have a facade that isn't really in tune with their actual agenda.
Soros, for instance, who supports the so-called social justice warriors more than any other individual in the whole world. They don't go pick at him, even though he admits the fact that he's stolen, by his own words, that he has stolen. He said, well, it's the rules of the game. I can do this legally, even though I know it's not right what I've done. They go and they support him and like him because he finances their movement, which is not a movement that's going to overthrow the real power in the world, is it?
Well, when it comes to the left, what is actual food for thought, if there are any leftists listening to this, which I doubt, but what's food for thought is that
there are a few, I guarantee you.
You think so? All right, I hope so. Because believe it or not, they're Gentile leftists are ripe for education on these matters, because this is their instincts are correct that they want to fight for a better world. They're just being manipulated. But my point to these people would be that notice how every time you push for something that coincides with the establishment, say open borders or globalization or refugee resettlement, every time the left protests for this, or feminism or gay marriage, whenever the left protests for this stuff, they get what they want, and they're basically free to run around and terrorize people and tell Christians that don't want to bake them cakes that, you know, put them in jail and stuff. But whenever the left comes out to boycott Israel, or whenever the left comes out to protest Goldman Sachs, or whenever the left comes out against the war in Iraq, they are suppressed, brutalized, terrorized.
Yep, that's right. That's right.
The boycott divestment movement is a genuine left-wing grassroots movement that has sprung up all over the world. And yet it gets no media attention. It becomes the state of Canada, the government of Canada, recently made statements. And this is a very liberal leftist government. It basically condemned BDS. All of the left-wing politicians in America condemned BDS.
Let's go right back. We've only got about a minute left, and okay, we're seeing this tremendous effort to totally eviscerate the alt-right, to keep us going away from the Jewish question. By, of course, this incredible, this is like they're going all out. They're doubling down against us. Is it time in your consideration, Mr. Stryker, that we are now going to double down ourselves? No more cucks in our movement. It's time now to get stronger than ever, and don't drop one bit in terms of what we say. In fact, we should redouble our effort and be more and more vocal, more and more straightforward about talking about the Jewish question. What do you think?
Well, people have to realize something. We're the underdog. We're going to have to power through this. We're going to have to push the boulder up the mountain. And one issue that cannot be compromised on is the Jewish issue. If you are out there saying that we can't criticize Jews at all, you might as well be my enemy. I mean, you might as well be on the other side.
Well, if you say Jews are our friends... And they're not.
That's even worse.
Operator, aren't you? Okay, thank you so much. We had with us, of course, folks, Mr. Stryker and the young man, and he's doing a great job. And we'll definitely have him back on next week. In fact, let's have you back on next week sometime. Great discussion. We could have a great talk many, many times. Folks, that's about it. Thank you so much for everything. We're coming into the Christian season, the Christmas season again. We appreciate your help. Right now, we're in the midst of our fundraising. We do it once a year during Christmas time. We think that's the most appropriate time to give gifts for the salvation of your children. What better gift could you give? Please go to davidduke.com, make a gift. And I've got a new publication I just did, an update called The War, The Jewish War Against Christmas. So davidduke.com, look forward to seeing you. I'll be back again tomorrow. Until then, just keep thinking free.